You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, Dog fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up
in that fish tank. Welcome back to the Fish Tank, right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt, the man with the best hands in the podcast business, OJ McDuffie. Juice, how you feeling today?
I'm feeling great, Big Seth. You know me, man. Every time we get a chance to get some old teammates in the tank,
that's right.
You know, I get excited, man. So this is a big day.
Even if it's not a wideout.
Doesn't have to be a wideout.
Yeah, but he might been run like a wideout.
He could have been a wideout.
Well, we'll have to ask him. Right. With that, Anthony Harris, Ant, welcome to the tank, man.
Hey, man. I'm glad to be here, man. Finally, get an opportunity to be on the Shark Tank.
The fish tank.
Oh, my God.
Shark Tank.
LB.
You always have some ideas you're pitching.
So
I don't know. I could see you on the Shark Tank one day. Right now, you're in the fish tank. Yeah, it's a whole different thing. It's way a little better. Bit rougher. Way better. Absolutely better. So, well, you know, so much to cover. But as you've already started, and I think if people are watching this and listening to it, more importantly, I think the most recognizable voice that I've ever heard in Dolphins history, man. So you've got one of those voices, Ant. I feel like as a kid, your parents made you gargle with glass or something, crush glass. Like, how much do you hear about your voice? At what point did you have like a little squeaky voice and puberty hit and all of a sudden that shit happened? Or give us some history there.
Well, a little history on it. To be honest with you, I couldn't really verbally speak loud until 5 years old. And the first word I actually said, my mom almost wrecked her car. We were driving down the road and there was a dog walking across the street with a McDonald's bag. Uh-huh. And the first thing I said was, hamburger. And my mom was, ah! And she almost cried because that's the first word she heard me. Because
hamburger.
Yeah, hamburger. And the thing was good with her was she couldn't hear me cry. She had to look into my carriage to see me cry because I couldn't cry above like a regular kid. So
you're saying when you were a baby, because at 5 years old, you were out of the carriage.
Oh, obviously.
Okay, all right. I'm like, damn. Yeah, late bloomer, dude.
You think about all those years she had to worry about hearing me cry. So,
Wow. So you could barely, like, you're saying as a baby, she slept well.
Very well.
And then shit changed in a hurry.
Quick fast. She never knew what my voice would sound like because I could never talk above a whisper.
I love that that's the first word that she heard.
Hamburger.
Hamburger. You ain't stopped saying hamburger.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't on that keto stuff or whatever. No. There's been a hamburger or two in your lifetime since then.
Of course. Or three.
Yeah.
You know, Big Seth, his voice reminds me of another defensive player that we all grew up with, Reggie White. Yeah, you got a lot of Reggie White in there, and I know we called him the Minister of Defense, but I also understand, talking to Stu Weinstein, you know, we do our research here. You know, you actually spoke in front of a few congregations yourself.
Yes, sir.
So was your dad a preacher?
No, he's one of the deacons of the church. Jesus. Yeah. Actually, my pastor's right-hand man up in Fort Pierce, Florida. And I just grew up in the church. That's how we grew up, you know, going to the Bible study, the Bible camps in the summer. And I come from a verse that everybody knows, train the child in the way they should go. When they get old, they won't depart from it. So my mom was going on to be with the Lord, but my dad and my grandmother are still around with the rest of my family. But we grew up in the church. And like right now, my whole family, aunts, uncles, sisters, brothers, cousins, all up in the church. Same exact church that I grew up when I was a kid.
That's awesome.
Wow, that is pretty good, man.
That's a little good.
Yeah, I love that. Stu Weinstein. I love that. Yeah, Stu gave us
that. But that's true. The Reggie White thing, have you heard that before? That's
several times.
Minister of Defense, no doubt. You mentioned a little bit that you grew up in Fort Pierce.
Yes.
Obviously, hell of a high school career, went to Auburn, hell of a college career. But at the end of your college career, you didn't get the look, you didn't get drafted.
Right.
You know, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, well, you know, I started off, and I'll be nicer towards the end of it. You know,
he always
throws that first round pick in my face, man.
It's the only material I have.
Yeah. Every time he throws that in my face. So, how difficult was that? You know, the numbers you put up, should have been a drafted player. And I know for us, you know, it was important for us that to get young at that point when we picked you up as a free agent, and also get fast, the speed. So how difficult, sorry for how difficult it was not getting drafted and then eventually coming here.
Well, you know, Jay, looking back at it right now, it was really a blessing for me. Not being drafted, not giving the, I don't want to disrespect anybody, but the the silver spoon in your mouth, always having to
Who would you be disrespecting by saying that?
Well, you know, I'm just saying some guys, you know, may not use it like that. but having an opportunity to continue to work for everything I got, you know, and for periods I was always an underdog. Oh, you'll never do this. You'll never do that. I stepped out of the shadows of one of my best friends in high school. He was a parade All-American and linebacker and academic All-American. And I was always second to him. And then, you know, going off to college, getting an opportunity to go to Auburn. And, oh, yeah, you'll go there, but you'll never step on the field. I leave Auburn the fourth leading tackle in Auburn history. You know,
to this day still.
And then to take, like you said, those stats and not be passed up in the draft, you know, it was God's will. You know, we started out by talking about, you know, my spirituality. It was God's will for me to, you know, continue to work for everything I had. And I think with Jimmy Johnson being a head coach and seeing something in me that some other teams didn't see and giving me that opportunity, it just benefit me.
Absolutely, man. Great stuff, man.
Yeah, that was a great year too, man. That was my first year, my rookie season, also undrafted. But whole different experience. But
I think he snuck into the building
and they never kicked me out for like 8 years. Yeah. It was unbelievable. But I'm glad you just brought up speed because Jimmy was all about youth and speed.
Yeah.
You had a lot of confidence in your speed. You were not one to shy away from talking about your speed. And in fact, if I recall, you would challenge damn near anybody to a race.
Yes, sir.
If we started the clock now, my guess is we're going to talk about these races from half this podcast. But talk about how the first one I remember was one of your a D lineman.
Yep.
We were talking about him earlier.
D lineman tried
to. Yeah, trying to challenge a D lineman. Now, he was a little bit up there in age, but it was Daniel Stubbs. And given he was a little bit up there in age, maybe he was a little bit bigger than you, you gave him, there was some, you said, hey, I'll spot you something.
Yes,
so I want to know, how did that come about? How did you choose Stubby? Definitely talk about that race. And just, it became like an underground, it was like Fast and the Furious or some shit. Yes. Like, you know, every week it seemed like the whole team gathered around.
That's right.
Somebody walked by with the checkered flag. And we got to watch a race that Anthony had bet somebody. It was always a wager. Something was on the line. We got a lot to talk about, but bring us back to that first one.
Well, the first one, as you know, at Dolphin Camp, we were always competitive. You know, offense, defense, special teams, guys was always competing. And it was that fun, you know, camaraderie there where everybody got together and wanted to challenge each other. I think that would make it a lot better. Well, Danny Stubbs at that time, UM guy, one of the faster D linemen that we had.
Right.
And I think, you know, he was a tweener, was an undersized guy that could probably possibly play a little linebacker. And he wasn't shy at all. He would talk to smack. And I didn't
find a lot to say.
Oh, he did. And I just didn't, you know, shy away from it. And then we got on to who's faster than who. Now, when it got down to it, you know, head up, it was like, okay, you know what? I definitely can smoke you.
Right.
And so Danny was like, hey, give me 10 yards, and we're going to run a 40-yard dash.
Woo!
And so
10
Danny,
yards in the 40.
10 yards in
so
the 40.
So he only wanted to cover 30.
Yeah, so he said 10 yards in the 40, and he called me out in front of the guys, like, hey, give me 10 yards, and it's a bet. And, you know, me and my competitive edge, and I'm like, hey, let's do it. And so leading up into the race, Danny was like, you know, didn't think I really was going to do it. Nice little wager out there. And
so hold on. Don't just roll past that. Okay. A nice little wager. Yeah. What long past do you have to worry about talking about?
Yeah.
What's a nice little wager?
He bet me 10 grand.
That's a nice little wager, Juice.
Yeah, he bet me 10 grand. Ooh. I was a young guy. You know, I knew Stubbs and, you know, the UM days. And like I said, he was one of the quicker deepest line. His first few steps was quick. And in my mind, I had to get out, you know, but John, you know, credit to John Gamble and Brad Rowe. They had us ready to go, training, them quick twitching muscles. And I felt like, you know what? I can do it. So.
Yeah. And that, you know, you say that, I mean, you're like, you also became like a rabbit. You had somebody to chase down.
Yeah.
A little bit of a head start. You had to go get it.
You had to go get it.
You're only running 40. You
didn't
got 10 yards.
Right. Yeah.
Well, we know how it ended up, but the people listening and watching don't.
Well,
so what happened?
Surprisingly so, it wasn't the whole 40. I caught him at the 25 yards. To be completely honest with you, because again, I propped myself in that 40 with them quick steps, and I gained on him, and he basically gave up, you know.
Oh,
now, he made good on the bet, but at the 25-yard line, I caught him.
He didn't pull up or nothing. Like, you know how people, when they know they pull a hamstring.
He didn't pull a hand,
the back goes out or something.
He just, once he saw me breathing on him again, and he, by 10 more yards, good, like, nah. I can't do it. You know, so he pulled up.
Downshifted on us?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so that was my first one.
And what was the reaction? I know, you know.
All the guys just went crazy. Oh, you know, man. Because Stubbs, he talks a lot. Oh, my God. He's a great guy. I love his competitive edge. But, you know, that was one, I guess, checking my flag right there.
Stubby, man. We got to get Stubby in the tank.
We always get those people to come in and, you know, rebut or so tell their side of the story. Of course. You know what I mean? You know, once you got tired of big guys, though, you kind of stepped into my realm a little bit. You wanted to mess with the wide outs, particularly one of my favorites of all time, Fred Barnett.
Yes, sir.
Tell me how that one went down.
Well, again, you know, Fred, to me, when I, you know, met Fred, he wasn't a outspoken guy. You know, he was a humble guy. He had, you know, his career, I think he was starting in Philadelphia. Right. He had done some great things. And again, you know, no disrespect to any of my teammates. But when we started talking, you know, it was almost like one of those, well, hey, you're barking at the wrong tree. Hey, you know, you ain't ready to run the wideout. You just be the D lineman. That's no, you know, comparison to the wideouts. And Fred was a pretty fast guy, you know.
He was.
But again, me being not shy from Fort Pierce, I'm not buying out for any challenge. Because I think when
it sounds like you were looking for the challenge.
Right, I think, you know, once I talked about it.
Yeah, then it's all right.
And I start, you know, not really calling people out, but say, hey, line them up. And then when somebody says something to me about it, it's like, okay, hey, put up or shut up. I'm not just talking just to be talking.
And Fred kind of got louder than I had heard Fred up
there. Yeah, he did. Yeah, because I think it was my usefulness, talking too much.
Yeah, all right, young buck.
Yeah, and wanting to shut me up. You know, I think that's where it comes at. But it was one of those things where, hey, we were going to go head up. It was no, hey.
You weren't giving Fred
10 yards. No.
Yeah, you know, one thing about Ant, too, is that, you know, with that speed, we didn't have to. You could play base personnel with an offensive sub. So he can go in the slot and guard somebody with his speed and obviously the strength. You know what I mean? I hated dudes like him in the slot, man. You know, you got guys that can run, but are also so much bigger and stronger than you. They get their hands on you. It's over, man. And that was a huge advantage. And that was part of that speed and youth movement that Jimmy was looking for right there. Yes.
And so maybe that's what Fred was like. He didn't want to see that out there.
Correct.
So he was going to try and get you in this race.
Yeah, exactly right.
He also, though, I remember he had that knee brace. He had come off the knee injury. And he was moving pretty good, though.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, like you said, they're talking to the young guys, maybe forgetting, you know, that pride catches up. And so when you've been in the league for a few and this young cat comes in.
You think Fred was still trying to prove himself at that point? Like, I still get it, but you know what I mean? Honestly, guys, like, we just sit back and relax. Let the young guys do what they do.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
take the Danny approach to the stretching thing. You don't run around the field, just go straight to your stretching spot. You know,
no jog and stretch.
Nah, just straight to the stretch.
I love it. So come on, how did it go?
Well, I mean, we lined it up, and if my memory serves me correctly, it was maybe about 4 or 5 false starts. You know, because it was jittery.
You know, we're definitely some false.
Oh yeah, it was jittery. But once we got on the way, it was it was tight, and you know, it was a tight race. Toward the end, it was more almost like photo finish. But you know, John Gamble and the guys, they gave it to me. I won that race, and
that one was close.
Yeah, wait, there was a bunch of DBs back there. Was there a bunch of defensive guys that gave you the race?
Yeah, of course.
John and Brad are definitely on the defensive side.
Of course.
And the defensive guys always, especially in that era, were just louder in general.
1,000%. Yeah, so that group right there was a fun group.
So you know, winning that race, you know, gave me some confidence. You know what?
I'm not a
proven veteran, you know, that a challenge, you know, took my challenge and hey, we went out there and got it done. And I was victorious in that race as well because it was a little talk.
Not that he's keeping track.
It was a little talk. Oh man, you just beat the D lineman. Come on, man. You know what I'm saying? You know, so now I got a wide out. So
there was some hype. Now, was there a wager associated with that one?
You know what? That's one thing about Fred. It was first class. He didn't want
to bet. It was all about pride.
Yeah. It was a pride thing. Like, let's get this. Yeah, I don't want your money, you know. Young buck, I don't want your money. You know what I'm saying? So, now Stubbs.
I think he knew better, Anthony.
Well, maybe.
I think he might have known better, man. Maybe. Fred had a nice little contract at that point, too.
Yeah,
so he really could have.
He did.
So you're saying he was on yours. He tried to make it sound like he didn't want Ant's money, but he was not trying to.
He just won. I think that.
And me being young about it, hey, listen, I just want the race. I just want, you know, hey, let's get out here and compete. Even if I lost, for me, it was like, man, you know what? I'm taking on guys that, you know, hey, that's been here, done that.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Like, did you watch these guys? Because those guys had a few years in the league at that point. So yeah. Did you, as a young guy in college or even in high school, watch those guys play?
Well, not so much so, Fred, because Fred wasn't that much older. You know right. what I mean? But at the end of the day, you know, I knew of him. And I knew he played in Philadelphia. He had some very successful years.
Yeah.
But just having the opportunity to just – challenge my teammates just to have that, hey, I got you in that race, right, you know, right. And then be respected as a young buck, you know, because at linebacker, I was one of those things that, hey, listen, man, I want to be the best I can at my position, but I definitely want to be the fastest. And if I got to challenge somebody else to get me better, that's what I would do.
I love that he went outside of the position. Like, I ain't worried about the linebackers. I'm going outside of the position. And there's one more race.
Yes, sir.
There's one more we have to talk about. And it's he knows where I'm going with it. He talked about the young buck.
I knew you were going to get to that one.
But we got to talk about T-Buck.
Yes, sir.
So Terrell Buckley, defensive back, certainly a guy that you knew of and name. And T-Buck at Florida State following Deion. So he had made a name for himself. But that race in particular was, I think, the one that if I asked 10 people, give me a good Anthony Harris story, I got 10 the time he raced T-Buck stories back. And I think it was the race itself, which we need to hear about, but also the wager. And then what happened afterwards.
Oh,
and also maybe how Coach Johnson felt about all this racing at this point. So you got to fill us in.
Well, the T-Bucks.
He's ready.
Oh, and listen, because this, everybody talks about it.
We might have to race when this is over. We can all be answering.
The T-Buck thing started, and it was different. It was summer of training, everybody getting it 40 times, and for whatever reason, you know, I'm bragging about my time. I thank God. I ran the 40 twice, and my first one was a 4.42, and my second was a 4.41. So now, you know, obviously I'm the fastest of my linebacker, my group, which is, that was my family, it's my boys. But hey, you know, some, I want to see who's going to be the fastest. Derek Rogers was close, but, But I posted a 4.41, and when I look at the times of everybody else, I'm like, man, I'm in the likes of all these, you know, the top guys. Jairus McPhail, I think, was the fastest running back. So then when it got to the DBs, you know, again, you know, my boy Sam, them there, and I'm looking at my guys. And T-Buck, the fastest time he posted was a 4.44. So that was started the conversation. So wait a minute now, what you talking about? Your time wasn't faster than mine. So, you know, but everybody keeps saying, you know what, head-to-head, it'd be a total different thing. And T-Buck was a humble guy, but he from Florida State. You know, if you rather him a little, you know, you ruffle feathers a little bit, you know, you can get it out of him. So all the guys were ganging up, the linebackers talking to the DBs, oh man, yep, hey, you won't be my boy Harris, won't be my boy Harris. You 4.44, he 4.41. So that kind of like started up.
You got the stats up there.
John, you know, he made it very competitive throughout training, you know, training and stuff like that. And so it took a while for T-Buck to finally say, let's do it. Because T-Buck was one of the professional guys as well. But, you know, it was like, you know what? It was so much pressure. It was so much there. And so
Down.
It was a few days. It wasn't like right then.
Right.
You know, during this course of the summer. And we finally lined that thing up, man.
Hold on. Before you line it up. So at this point, right, we've had two races. This is the third race. It's taken a couple days for T-Buck to say yes. So this thing is like a prize fight that's building up. Like, we're out, you know, we can't, when's it going to be? I'm making sure Harvey said, we're going to get this. Hold on, Harvey. There's a race going on downstairs. I got to get down there. But then there was something on the line for this one. This wasn't a Fred Barnett, I'm not going to take your money.
Wasn't a stubby 10 grand.
No. This here was car for car.
Car for car. And we're not talking Civic for Corolla.
Not there's anything wrong with it.
Not at all. I'm just saying that I want people to understand. I want to paint the picture.
Yeah.
What were you riding at that point in time?
Well, at that time, I had a custom-made Suburban that was just the inside alone was about $50,000 worth of stereo equipment and what have you. And T-Buck had a nice Mercedes. And, you know, it was his idea. It wasn't me. He was like, hey, let's go car for car. And I think really what it was he was basically trying to see what not I would be scared to do it.
Right.
Like, you know, the stub was 10 grand, Fair Barnett, oh, let's not do it. I don't want your money, young buck. And T-Buck, let's say it's car for car. So on the street, people look at that like, oh, nah. I'm not going to do it.
Right now, Caleb Thornhill right now is like freaking out. He's like, this is everything I tell guys not to do. But it was still fun.
So, yeah. So,
of course, I had no stakes in it.
So, I mean, just leading up to it. And it was like you said, when you guys going to do it? When you going to do it? And it was one training day. We got done training and we went outside of where we were training at. And, you know, it became real when John and Brad started to mark it off. And I can't lie, right here on the podcast, I tell you, I got a little nervous. I'm like, oh my gosh, because this thing got real. Not that I was scared to run. It's just that, man, car for car,
right?
Pink slip. I mean, man. And now, granted, he 4.44, 4.41. Hey, that's right. Fraction of a second. Right. So you got to be really on it.
Were you like, damn? I hope John didn't fuck up when he pressed the timer. Was I really a 4.41?
And the jitters was on 1,000. Oh, I mean, it was on 1,000. I can't speak for T-Buck, but the jitters was on 1,000. But in the back of my mind, I also said, you know what, man, this guy here, great guy, you know, top round pick, went to Florida State, I went to Auburn. I mean, it's a lot riding on this outside of just the race.
Yeah, and the 50-something guys that are pulling at the mouth for this thing.
Oh, my gosh. The guys were there. It made it even.
Could have sold tickets to this race.
Yes. That day, it could have been, you know. Now, Jimmy didn't know anything about this, man, but, you know.
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet. And it wasn't a nice thing afterwards. But yeah, we lined it up. And just like the Fred Barnett deal. But this one, if I had to guess, there are 20, 25 false starts. It was some nerves.
Consequences for false starts. Oh, in this. You know, in the Olympics, you probably get disqualified, right? But in this, you just.
Car for car, you're going to make sure
you got to beat the whistle, right?
Now, I will fast forward and say, on one time we finally got out, I had a great start, and then I didn't say pull up, but he stopped, because as if it was like, oh, wait a minute now. Yo, I'll be real.
Somebody call the hacks. We got to check
it out. And then they called it like halfway. So I think he felt like, you know what? If I can get this youngster, I'll keep going. But he saw I was pulling. So they blew it. We came back to a few more false starts. And for the record, I will tell you this for everybody listening. T-Buck got out on me on a false start. Well, we false started so many times. I said,
come on,
I'm going to go get it.
You're saying he fall, that should have been a 26th false start.
Yeah, yes. But instead of me stopping, I just, that competitive drive is like, you know what, I'm going to go get it. Now, T-Buck would turn him up. He would pick it up, turn it up. And, you know, toward the end, man.
That's a little fast, dude.
Yeah. I'm talking about the finish line was there. It was almost like one of those movie finishes. I dove, you know what I'm saying, right. Tried to finish. And it hurt my shoulder, my hamstring. Oh, I mean,
that's the worst thing that could happen.
Trying to go get him, you know what I'm saying? Because again, you know, to be in the likes of a T-Buck and just having guys with the respect to say, hey, I'll race you.
Right.
Because typically linebackers, come on. Right. We shouldn't be in the same race with a.
I mean, Buck was 180 pounds?
I'm 240, 245 at the time, and I'm running times 4.41. And like I said, people tell you, man, for the record, you know what? He blew me out. I literally had to go get him. And at the end, it was one of those, okay, yeah, he won. But I dove at the end. I tried to give everything I got. But, you know, I fell short.
So when you're diving, are you thinking about your damn truck?
Yes. Almost like this. No. I got my keys, you know. So, yeah.
So you're banged up. T-Buck wins.
Yep.
And then what happens?
So now it's time to give up the car. So at the time, I had this elaborate alarm system. So the alarm system I had... a robber, somebody can take my car. I can give them the keys.
Yeah.
But halfway down the road, it goes to flashing and beeping. If you don't put a code in.
Low-jacked his ass.
Yeah. If you don't put a code in, the car turns off.
Right.
Quite naturally, I didn't give him the code. Because.
I love it.
Yes, bro.
I gave him the keys, but not the code.
So I gave it to him, and quite naturally, he's leaving, and I'm like, dang. But. My car is down a couple blocks down in the middle of the road. The alarm's going off. You don't know the code.
On the side of the road on University.
Yeah.
It said, Buck, turn down, turn right. And I don't think he got to Pollo Tropical.
Yeah. So, you know, it was built in a system like that. I don't know if they make them like that anymore, but yeah. And in my mind, I'm like, hey, I'll walk down there to get my car. But when I put this code in, I'm going to take my car home.
So who ended up with the car?
So we ended up having it was, again, first class, T-Bug is always first class guy. We ended up talking to something else, and he had this game machine or whatever. So ended up, you know, okay, you don't have to give me the car, youngster. You know, you can buy this game machine for me. So ended up doing like that. So he was a first class guy. He worked a deal out with me, so then I had to give up my car, so.
Which damn credit card companies were as nice as
T-Bug. Yeah, so.
T-Bug just wanted to make you sweat a little bit. Man.
Yeah,
he wasn't going to keep you
with it. He did. But I didn't know that.
But he drove off with the wheel.
You got to disappear. Yeah. You got to go around the corner. You got to disappear so, you know.
I think he would have taken it home, Juice, if it didn't turn off on him.
Yeah, I think so.
I think he would at least have to come pick it up in his driveway. But then what happened? So you're banged up. You pulled your hammy.
Yep.
You got to go tell Jimmy. How'd that go?
Listen. Jimmy was those guys, when you look at him, man, I'm telling you, that respect, that reverence for who he is, who he was as a coach, and it's the same guy that gave me my first opportunity.
Right.
Now it's like, okay, I'm depending on you, Anthony, to come out here and play for the team, but now you're banged up for a race. Now, all it'd be the third race, but again, you know, now you're pulling a hamstring, and it really was a down spiral because you know, from the hamstring and me being a competitor, trying to come out there and still compete, tape it up, stuff like that. I won't change anything except for the fact that, you know, my competitive edge has put me in a position where, hey, it was one too many races.
Yeah.
Because it led to a couple of injuries because, again, trying to overcompensate for the hamstring. And, you know, I still won't take away from the competitive side, but I think I probably would have just, you know, shut it down after race number two.
After Fred.
Yeah.
I tell you, man, it's like, that's a tough deal. You talk about playing for Jimmy, where you got to show up. You can't be in the tub.
Yes.
You talk about being undrafted. You can't be a guy that's, right. You know, sit back like some of the first rounders said. You know, you got to go out there and show up, man. So let's talk a little bit about going, you know, your rookie year. You know, you come in, you don't play as much. You start the last three games, your rookie year. But then the next year, all out, full starter, the whole year round. Matter of fact, I think I remember right. So I think he made a signature play. At that 97 season, I think we're playing against.
He knows where you're going.
Playing against the Chiefs. They had Elvis Gerbach at quarterback. They had Andre Moon Rising. They had a Hall of Famer in Marcus Allen. Marcus Allen. And we had lost a couple of games. They were coming in on fire.
Yeah.
So tell me about the signature play you made in that game. Seth and I still talk about it like it was yesterday, man. Talk about that game and, you know, that signature play.
Well, first of all, giving credit to George Hill. I think he's passed away now. Great defensive coordinator and linebacker coach, which I love the fact that the defensive coordinator was also my position coach. And Jimmy Johnson for trusting in me in that game because in that particular play, we had nickel on the field and the linebacker that they chose, and Zach is my great friend, but the linebacker they chose to be on the field at that particular time was me on that 4th-and-1.
Let's set the scene for a second. Hold on. You know, this is fourth quarter.
Yes, sir.
Right? I think Lindo had just kicked a field goal, put us up 17-14. Mm-hmm. There's less than 6 minutes in the game. And friggin' Gerbach's hitting Andre Rison for 15 yards a clip. And they're just marching down the field. And we're just like, oh, shit, it's one of these. And they had 3rd-and-20. And there's nothing worse than 3rd-and-20 than you see that long one. And now, so it was 4th-and-short, man. Yeah. And they were going for it because they were kind of in that range where, you know, do you kick it?
They were feeling good about themselves. Right.
Yeah.
And they called for nickel and George Hill, hey, Anthony, you're out. And I never forget, it was a man-to-man coverage and I had Marcus Allen, the Hall of Famer, not future Hall of Famer, the Hall of Famer Marcus Allen. And you talking about my eyes was big and ironically, my whole entire family was in at that game.
Oh, wow.
I never forget. It was a huge game. Again, Fort Pierce is skipping a hop. So my whole entire family and the actual end zone where Marcus Allen was driving out, my family was in that end zone.
Even better.
Yeah. And,
a whole lot of Harris jerseys.
Oh, yes. It was awesome. And, my opportunity, for Marcus Allen, it was like, I heard nothing.
Right.
Absolutely nothing until I made the actual play. It was 4th-and-1. And to me, I like to say they went to their money guy. And obviously, our defense went to their money guy.
Oh, he's the money guy.
You know, and Elvis threw it to Marcus. And oh my gosh, you talk about a form tackle, hit him, ball incomplete. And I stood over him, talking about like a mountain, and stood over him, talking, pointing to the sideline.
Didn't have all that taunting. Right.
All my friends, all my teammates, everybody was congratulatory. And one particular face that I saw that who's passed away recently was Calvin Jackson. I went to college with Calvin up at Auburn, and he was one of the first ones that ran over and congratulated me because we did a lot of big things at Auburn just like that. Oh, yeah. It was just, life-changing for me to tackle a guy like that. But again, more importantly, to not let my teammates down. Because Marcus Allen, he caught that ball and put a move on me. And guess what? We're going home and they're going to the playoffs.
Exactly right.
It was great. It was wonderful.
But we know Marcus Allen wasn't running 4-4 or 4-1 or 4-2.
Not at that point he was.
But he had that wiggle, though.
Yeah.
He had that wiggle still, man.
And there's a funny thing about it because the very next year, Marcus Allen was on a production team that came to the Dolphins, and all the guys kept messing with, "Hey man, the guy right there, that's the one who tackled you." It was the 4th-and-1 guy, whatever.
How Marcus handled?
Yeah, oh man, very professional. At the time, I'm pretty sure he remembered the game, but not me. I mean, come on, who was I at the time?
Right.
But
guys that knocked the hell out of me, man.
Yeah, but
I don't know, man.
I think at that point though, Marcus was like, he'd been Super Bowl MVP and all those. I don't want to say he didn't care because that takes away from your accomplishment.
Right, right.
But, Marcus was a little bit – he had that too cool in him as well.
Yeah, he was cool.
Oh, no, he was. Yeah. Great guy because I went toe-to-toe with him and then finally everybody got us together.
Yeah.
We were in the chow hall and doing training camp and we got to talk a little bit.
I love it.
And it was great. Great guy.
I love it. How many times have you told that story? Because this is what we like to bust.
A million.
Juice.
Yeah.
So my man here at one point, because I was the picture guy. I had to get the pictures. Hey, Seth, can I come up and look at some pictures? Remember, you got some business cards made.
Yes.
He got some business cards.
Oh, my gosh. You went way back. Oh, my God.
Oh, I had to, man. I remember getting – I was like, nah, my man said it was a form tackle, and it was on every damn business card.
Yes, it was.
How many of those things did you order?
Oh, my gosh. Thousands. You know what? I still have some back in Fort Pierce. Going through some old things, and my mom passed away. I came across a box of them. Yeah, so it's funny.
We need to get our hands on one.
I used that picture.
So what's the business?
Well, at the time it was called 51 Pro Clean, just like your Stanley Steamer. With the going around doing the cleanings of the company. So I don't think you knew this, but I had that picture painted on side of one of the vans.
The vans too.
Well, yeah. So it was 51 Pro Clean, and it was a business, like I said, just like carpet upholstery cleaning and stuff like that.
I love it. Yeah, the business cards. We gotta get one of the cards. That picture is, it's got some mileage on it. Man, that was great. That was great.
Now I still have the picture. I got plenty 8x10s if you want one.
Yeah. We need one.
Oh, trust me.
We need one.
Trust me.
Absolutely.
I
got plenty 8x10s.
Yeah, plenty of them.
So 1997, there's another one of my favorite stories about Anthony in 1997. This one actually was before all of that, and it certainly wasn't as glorious as tackling Marcus Allen on a 4th-down play to save the game. This was in training camp. As we talked about earlier, you cannot mistake the Anthony Harris voice, right? And one day, early on in training camp, everybody's there early, the weight room's buzzing, there's 80 guys there, and music's pumping and the whole thing. And I get a call on the cell phone. It's Neil Gulkis. Neil was on the PR team with me. Everybody here in the Fish Tank knows Harvey Green, the legendary Harvey Green. But Neil was the number 2 PR guy, and he called me. He said, "Hey, did you put Anthony Harris on with Joe Rose in the radio?" I was like, "No," I kind of got defensive. This is only my, I've only been there. It's my second year. It's my first year full time. "No, I didn't put him on. I didn't." "Are you sure?" "They just said Anthony Harris is coming up next." And then I'm listening, but I don't think it's Anthony Harris.
Right. Like, yeah.
And he said, "Anthony's got that scratchy voice." There's some buzz about you at this point, right? Because it was, again, Jimmy, the youth movement, young players who are going to take the next step. So it made sense for Anthony to be a guest on Joe's show. I go running down in the weight room. Anthony's over there like he's on a bench press or something. Yeah. I'm like, "Ant, did you just call Joe Rose?" "No, I didn't call Joe Rose." And I said, "Someone's trying to be me. Who's trying to be me?" He's like, and so you remember that?
Yeah, I remember it.
Well, I come down. It wasn't Anthony Harris. we had signed a guy from Canadian League or whatever, and his name was Charles Anthony. Oh, but for whatever reason, they kept saying next up is Anthony Harris. And I think they kept calling him. I think they thought they booked Anthony Harris.
Right.
And some intern for QAM must have put on Charles Anthony. He's getting asked linebacker questions about starting this year. And they keep calling him Anthony, and the guy's just answering because he figured. So what was going through your head?
For me, it was the weirdest thing because, again, like you said, like, wait a minute, I'm trying to get on the scene, but somebody's pretending to be me already, you know. So when we found out exactly what happened, but I thought it was a joke, to be honest with you. And you know, yeah, I thought it was a joke, but turns out it was, like you say, it was Charles Anthony, not Anthony Harris. So.
Yeah, and you made a little bit more of a mark in that year in your Dolphin career than he did. But I remember, and then he comes walking out. So if you remember off the weight room, there was that little side door. Yeah. The whole thing, well, hell, the building's not even being used anymore. But you'd go through, you'd cut through the weight room, and we had that little tiny office. So he comes stumbling out of there, wiping the, you know, the crust out of his eyes, and it was Charles Anthony.
Yeah.
And all was revealed. But yeah, Neil was hot. I'm scared. Anthony thinks somebody's trying to impersonate him. It was great.
And let's talk a little bit about your linebacker room, man. We talked a little bit about Zach. He was an instant star coming out. You know what I mean? He's got that starting nod early in his career. And, you know, the rest is history with him. But you had Izzo, O.J. Brigance. Yeah. You know,
Dwight Hoyer.
Yeah, big Dwight with his big head.
Chris Singleton.
Yeah. So you guys had, you had some guys in that locker room. Talk about that linebacker room a little bit.
Well, before it even got to that, I remember my rookie year, George Hill, we had the team meeting with Jimmy. We had a defensive meeting, and then we went to the linebackers. And George Hill came in, and you're talking about somebody got nervous. He walked up. I'll never forget his first speech. He looked up. He looked at us. It was 16 linebackers. Never forget it. He said, hey, guys, great everybody's here. I'm George Hill, defensive coordinator, linebacker coach. And he introduced his assistant, and he's like, let's see here. There's 16 linebackers? Okay, we're keeping six. Mm-hmm. Turned around and started on the board. Now, me, I'm looking around like, wait a minute now. I see Aubrey Beavers. He just got drafted in the second round. Jeff Cobb was a second round pick the year before. Dwight Hoyer, Chris Singleton was a first round draft choice at New England Patriots. We had Zach in there. We had LaCurtis Jones from Baylor, who got drafted before Zach.
Yep.
I mean, I'm counting, oh my gosh, easy 8 to 10 guys already. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be tough. But like you said, that room, it was some great guys. You know, one person that really, really, really I took to was Dwight Hoyer. No offense to anybody else. You're talking about the ultimate pro, that guy. Because literally, you know, the young guys could have been the ones that come in and take his job.
For sure.
I mean, you're talking about asking a question. It's a funny thing because George Hill came up to me one day. He said, hey, talk to you. Hey, stop asking that guy questions. So for me, I didn't want to ask the coach every time, but I wanted to be for sure because Dwight seemed like he knew all three positions.
So he wanted you asking the coach the question.
Right. Well,
ask me the question.
Right, because I think at the time it was they wanted Jimmy. He liked the younger guys.
Right.
And I think that's another reason why, you know, I excelled the way I did because Jimmy liked them fast, running, good cover guys, you know, and young. So Dwight, not saying he was old guy, but he was an older guy, one of the veteran guys. And Dwight, I just knew his knowledge. You can tell that he was a guy, the ultimate pro, but he knew all three positions. And so to be for sure, I would all, hey, Dwight. So George picked that up and he pulled me to the side one day and I never forget. He said, hey, man, stop asking that guy. You're confident enough in yourself. You should know it. You got it. So it wasn't that, I don't think it was more so don't ask him. I think he wanted me to believe in myself. And for me, and from there, I took that as that. I said, you know what? Okay, if I screw it up, I screw it up. But I mean, you know what? I'm just going to, you know, take to my teaching and go from there. But that linebacker room, good family guys. We never had any animosity toward each other. We all vying for playing time, including my boy Zach. And, like I said, we worked hard. You know, that group worked hard. We stayed late, came in early, and it just became one of those traditional things that we were going to work harder than anybody else in the field.
That was a hardworking group. And the thing that amazed me, and, you know, that was my first year, but the linebackers that were there, and you just mentioned them, when you talk about Singleton, when you talk about Dwight, they were big, big guys.
Yeah.
And then
different style linebackers then.
Totally different style.
Yeah.
But that's, and you looked at Zach and you looked at, and not that Anthony's small, but it was just a different body size. And you know, O.J. Brigance was rocked up, but he wasn't this huge giant.
Right.
And granted, those guys, you know, they excelled more on special teams.
Run.
Izzo and That's what it was. Yeah. It was all about that speed.
Yeah, we missed one that was in that group too, Jack Del Rio.
Well, he wasn't there long.
Yeah, he wasn't. He wasn't.
Speaking of your friend Zach.
Yeah, Zach.
You're right, but also a big, big guy.
Yes.
Yeah, that was crazy. You know, that was what was going on in the meeting room. But you're a linebacker in your first year with Zach Thomas, with Izzo. There had to be some other stories. Now, they came on here. We talked about when they had to, when OJ and a couple other people, Dan Marino or so, made them streak across the, rolling hills.
It hasn't been verified. It's been documented.
I don't know. Once it's in animation.
It's been animated, yeah.
Once there's a cartoon made about it, it's absolute fact. How fun was it with those guys, the young guys? Learning from the veterans was one experience, but how fun was it being a young linebacker with that crew?
Listen, we had some great times, and it's funny we got Juice here right now, because one of the funny stories was with myself, Larry Izzo, and O.J. Brigance. So O.J. Brigance, for some reason, O.J., boom, sometimes they call him Juice as well.
Yeah.
So in our linebacker meeting, we called him Juice. And Mike Westhoff was up in the special team meeting, and he was given a special team script and stuff like that. And so he just said, "Hey, yeah, you remember that, Juice?" So OJ Brigant said, "Yes, coach." But he was talking about this Juice.
He remembered it, though.
No, he's talking about this Juice. And me and Larry, we were crying, because it was the funniest thing. And we really couldn't laugh out loud because, we didn't want to get in trouble. So
yeah,
I'm talking about, it was an inside thing with me and Larry. Larry was red as an apple because we just couldn't stop laughing.
Oh my God.
But OJ didn't think it was that funny.
No, I bet.
Because it was like, bro, he's not talking to you. He's talking at you.
He's a serious dude.
And yes, man. So it was funny, man. I still remember that meeting, man. We just couldn't stop laughing.
I love that. You remember that? Do you remember it?
No, I don't remember that.
We were like, who the hell's answering?
I didn't even know he even said anything, though. Right. I probably just went straight to answer. But yeah,
cool. But they were right there with him. We were going to lie back and stop with each other. And it was like instant. Hey, remember that Juice? Yeah. And so Larry and I were just dying laughing.
The stories of what goes on in those meeting rooms, like when the coach turns their back, those are some of my favorite stories. Well, you guys are all clowning. It feels like a fifth grade classroom when you tell those.
And I'm going to tell you, I'm sure he's got a lot. I'm going to ask you a little bit. Mike Westhoff in general. That was hilarious. At the same time, you hope you weren't the guy he was pointing out and running it back.
With that red dot on you. And the thing about Mike, listen, though, he would talk, and I've never seen him laugh. Like, but the things he say and the way he says things, it's just so funny, man. Like, not saying making fun of people, but you got the red dot on you, and some things you'll say, it's just out off the cuff, and it's just so hilarious. That guy was, great special teams coach, great guy to be around. It was a straight shooter too. He told you if you were getting it done, if you're not, it wasn't getting it done, and what you needed to do in order to stay on the team.
To get it done? Yeah. Were you ever on the wrong side of that?
Yes, I
was. I think we all were at some point.
Because I think
Mike didn't discriminate.
No.
A little bit for me was because at Auburn, getting up to where I was, I was taking off a lot of special teams. Like most, colleges, you start linebacker, you take off. So now you go to the pros. That's your bread and butter.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I didn't want to excel at that, but for me, it was like, man, I'm trying to learn the defense, man. That's what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was on the other side of that a lot. And, I had some of those close the door moments with Mike, and I was like, hey, Harris, better get your shit together, bro. But I like that. I like the fact that he was straight up with me, and he didn't beat around the bush. He told you straight up.
Yeah. Mike was definitely straight up.
And you talk about it too. And Monday after a game, especially if you win, it's a lot more fun if you win. But if you lose, that special team meeting has the whole organization
right
in there.
Right.
The whole organization, offense, defense, trainers,
everybody.
And so, don't be that guy.
So Mike had a whole audience.
Oh, yeah. I think he loved it.
There's no thinking about it. The audience he had,
and the thing that made me so nervous was some of the times, he would start the meeting and Jimmy wouldn't be there. And I'm like, oh, hurry up, get to my play. Hurry up and get past my play. And it's just so ironic. He never got to my play before Jimmy got in there. And sometimes it's almost like time stops because when he finally gets you and he get that dot on you, dang, how many times you gonna rewind this on me, bro? You know,
we got it, my guy.
You know, but yeah, listen, you gotta take the good with the bad. Because when you do something good, you want to, keep rewinding. Right. But, you know, it's one of those bad things. So at the end of the day, man, you know, it was a great experience.
And then, in your second year, let's talk about some additions to that defense. The JTs, the Sams, the DR, Derek Rogers and those guys. Oh, and then gosh. I think a couple years after that, you get Pat on that defense as well.
I mean, it was awesome, man. I had a group of guys, young group of guys that wanted the same goal. Hey, we wanted to win, obviously. But at the end of the day, we wanted to be a great unit. And those names he called out were guys that worked just as hard as the linebacker group. You know what I mean? So when you talk about the Sams, the Pat Surtains, the Derek Rogers. I mean, it's just a group of guys that, you know, always wanted the best. And hey, we wasn't trying to find the easy way out. And that, to me, really worked well because we went out there and it was some games that we had to bow our backs and do the things we need to do in order to be successful. And that group of guys, I wouldn't trade it for the world, man. Some of those names, again, like I said, what the JTs and being a Hall of Famer and stuff like, you know, boy, Zach, you know, just to say I played on a defense with those guys, you know, I got there for the rest of my life.
Well, let me just apologize for the offense, sir. So much weight on y'all back, man. I walked off the field with quite a few three and outs, man. I didn't want to look at y'all in the eye, man. So we
just walk right by.
On behalf of the all 22 to 25 offensive players, we apologize.
Hey, but we were all a team. Although, you know, it was little mumbles here and there.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, you're on the sideline in the water.
You were quiet about it. Zach and JT weren't so quiet.
They wasn't. They were vocal. They're
not quiet about a whole lot.
Yeah. So
now, Drew said though he felt like he could any section of that locker room, you know, that he felt like the defensive guys looked at him as kind of an offensive player defensive with a defensive guys, mentality. Right. Can you vouch for that?
Of course, because it's a tenacity and you know, willing to do the dirty work. You know, I mean, but at the end of the day, we knew that who Juice was. He was going.
I mean, OJ McDuffie, not the dance. Okay, I'm just
the real Juice. Yeah, listen, you know, out of Penn State, you know, great guy, great career, dependable. And, you know, when it got nut-cutting time, we knew, hey, listen, you're going to find Juice some kind of way. He's going to get us out of this. But like you said, that mentality just had the tenacity and willing to do the dirty work. You know, because you nowadays you get some receivers that, hey, they don't want to go across the middle. Or they don't want to go block or, you know.
And they can't even get hit anymore.
No more.
You can't even hit them and they still don't
want to. Like flag football.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I love when guys from this era, I don't want to say old guys, but guys from your era, like flag football. I love it. I still look at it. I'm like, man, I would die. I would die with one of those hits. But it has changed so much. So a couple minutes ago, you talked about take the good with the bad. I want to talk about the good because you have really dedicated yourself to a lot of good. Mm-hmm. You know, 1999, I think, was your last season here. We know you're from Florida, but Fort Pierce is a couple hours away. But you've stayed, you've remained a South Florida guy since your playing days and have truly dedicated. I don't know how many people know this, but Anthony has truly dedicated your life, your career to helping young people, both on the field and in the classroom. So talk a little bit about what you're doing now. And kind of how that all that came about.
Well, right now, it's going on my 18th year as a dean of discipline at a school right now in Miami Gardens here, right close by. I accidentally threw a rock and hit the school. The school I'm at right now is...
You're the dean of discipline now. Don't throw a rock at the school.
It's we changed the name. It's Excelsior Prep Charter of Miami Gardens. It used to be Excelsior Charter Academy. Great organization. Tim Bayer Rodriguez is the owner of the organization and followed by a whole host of people that his mom is going on to be with the Lord as well. Alicia Bauer, she gave me my opportunity to lead the school. And we're doing some great things in the Miami Gardens area. We're a K-8 school. But at the end of the day, you know, we're servicing the students in the Miami Gardens area the best way we know how. With the little we do have, we're trying to make, you know, these students great. Our job is to make sure that when they leave our organization, that they can go out and be successful with young kids off them. Like I said, my 18th year, but 9 years with this organization, top first class organization. And my other two schools that I was at for the other 9 years were both high schools, one in Broward, another one in Dade County. But at the end of the day, no one could ever tell me that what I do now gave me the same joy that I had when I played football. Servicing kids and the youth of, you know, these underprivileged communities it's been a calling on my life. And I thank God, first and foremost, for blessing me, being around some great organizations and touching a lot of kids on and off the field when it comes to helping them matriculate through, you know, and it hasn't been easy, you know, because a lot of our kids are underprivileged. And then we talk about the football aspect of it. I coach several schools, now coach at American Heritage, with, you know, the likes of Pastor Tan.
With Pat Surtain. Somehow they found each other.
Yep. He asked me to come, you know, coach the linebackers there. We're just coming off of a state championship last year. In 5A. Yeah, who's counting?
Congratulations.
Yeah. But again, another great organization I'm a part of. But dealing with the youth is just a calling of my life. I'm also a consultant for the Urban League of Greater Miami for another nonprofit organization, Sharon Henley. You think you guys know Sharon?
Absolutely.
I just thank God for the opportunity that, you know, every organization I've been a part of has been great, welcoming to me and allowing me to be who I am and to assist these kids in any way I can.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these young people will probably thank you for the opportunity you've given them.
Absolutely.
I know that we've never had an event, as long as you were available. You know, Anthony's never said no whenever we did any events at the foundation. I've had you playing ping pong. I've had you shopping. I've had you doing all those things. So, you know, I thank you for that. But the work you're doing with young people in this community.
Yeah, and he also shows up to a lot of games still, too. And Anthony's one of the guys like me that watches the damn game. You know what I mean? Ant watches the game. A lot of the dudes in there hobnobbing and whatever they're doing, man, he's there watching the game.
Now, you guys aren't up in the 400. Like, you guys, this is in the...
I'm not sweet, man.
Okay, just make a shirt.
Yeah, I don't know why you always trying to...
I just want to know. I want to paint the picture of where you guys are.
Yeah, we're in the alumni suite. Comfortable.
Very comfortable in the alumni suite.
Are you wearing your aqua jacket?
I have, from time to time. But, you know, anytime I get the opportunity, man, like I said, to come back to be a part of the great organization that gave me my opportunity, and then seeing the guys now play, you know, we're still rooting for them, wanting to be successful. I think now they're getting a lot more than we did. This lovely facility they got over here. Oh, my gosh, you know, it's great. But, again, times change, things change,
right.
You know, particularly the money they get nowadays. It's, but, again, as I said, my time is my time. Again, you know, OJ's, our time is our time. You know, and those guys going to be the same way years when they retire, you know. So
yeah, I remember because 96, I think, 90, your rookie year was the first year in Davie.
Correct.
Right? And so I remember by 96, it was still brand new. And there were veterans on the team, particularly Danny, that would, you know, say how spoiled you were to be in there and have a cappuccino machine. And, you know, and it's so crazy. And then you look at this place now and it's unbelievable. So I would be wrapping up the show now if I followed my notes exactly. And I'm terrible at following my notes exactly. But there was something else. And we talked about it before. And then you reminded us as soon as you came in and greeted all of us. Anthony's handshake.
Man. I'm usually ready, too.
It's like a fucking punishment.
I'm usually ready,
you know,
bro.
So you come in. So, like, my stepdad, he taught me to look somebody in the eye and give them a firm handshake. You take that to another level. I almost feel like it's a test of wills. I almost feel like you could, and you look them in the eye, and you're kind of like, yeah, you feel that, don't you? That's what it feels like. Then I'm icing my hand down for 3 days. So, you know, there's got to be a little history there.
You know, and going back to the school I'm at right now, Excelsior, there's been some jokes about that because when guys come to the facility, even the owner, Tim, any guests we have, any resource officers, everybody talks about that as if I'm purposely trying to.
It feels like it, man.
Like I'm staking my territory. Like, you, hey, I'm the alpha male here. But really, it's not. You know, it's just, you know, my dad has just always told me, hey, listen, you shake a man's hand, you know, let it be firm. I think I just take it a little extra.
Yeah. I don't know, you know, those grips or whatever. Yeah. Like, I feel like you spent your whole life gargling glass and squeezing them damn grips because that handshake.
But you know, even my pastor, in my church in Fort Pierce, he gives me the fist bump.
Yeah, he's smart. Know,
my uncle, my uncle James, he gave me the fist bump.
Dial that shit back a little bit.
Everybody else gets dabbed. You get.
They always say that. Now, I go in like this. Oh no. You know,
and the look in his eye, Juice, he kind of looks right at you like, man. You're going to remember this one.
Yeah. But the ladies at my school, Miss Kelly and Miss Ferguson, they always say when the people leave, like, man, Harris, what you doing, man? Why you dating a man like that? You know, because there's a couple guys that came to visit the campus and they actually buckle. in front of the ladies, and that's embarrassing, you know. And, but they're doing it. I don't think.
Wait a minute! You put the death grip, and the guy takes a knee.
We got a couple of guests that come to the school to visit because
it's no joke.
Yeah, and they buckle, and unfortunately for them, it's embarrassing. But at the end of the day, but I'm not trying to do anything. You know,
but you're not eating off either, though.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. So you're gonna let them know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you're listening or watching, you meet Anthony Harris, just be ready. I'm going to shake this man's hand, be ready. That's all I got to say. Hey, all kidding aside, although that is very serious, all kidding aside, I know we talked about this for almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
And you're a busy guy. You just talked about all the things you're doing, but you made it work today. We appreciate you, man. It's great to have you in the tank.
Hey, listen, great that you guys are, you know, welcoming to come in. I know you've been asking me several times, and we talk about it. And it's, if it's not work, if it's football, you know, again, serving the community, doing the things that
Absolutely.
I do. But I'm glad we made it work this time. You know, I was very excited about it, and I just can't wait to see it and hear it myself. But thanks for the opportunity. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for diving in.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude.
Okay, this one for them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie. Bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budget. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in.
Fish tank. Go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rockin' with OJ and Seth, time to dive up in that fish tank.